So, hello. I'm Travis, and for four of you in the room, I will be volunteering teaching science in the school this year. So you'll get to see more of me and talk more about science with me. So Andy is our first sort of scientist in residence. In the springtime, we have artists in residence who come to the village, which you will meet. You'll all meet this coming February when we have them. And we're toying around with the idea of having scientists or researchers come here and do research as a part of the village happenings so that they can learn more about the valley and teach us more about the valley, but then also benefit by being in a really great classroom. So Andy today is going to talk about soil and in particular contaminants in the soil and what we need to think about when we're gardening. That's particularly interesting for us because we live next to a big mine site. And a mine site can have a lot of contaminants that can get into your garden, like lead or arsenic or other heavy metals. And we'll go through some slides later today that will show some of the data that has been collected at Holden already about our garden spaces, which has showed that they are actually relatively safe to be in, which is a good thing. But Andy's going to talk about the significance of those sorts of contaminants and gardens.
All right. Hi. So my name is Andy Gillespie. I am a rising senior at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I'm majoring in environmental studies and geology. So kind of how I got interested in toxicology started when I took this class last winter called Geology and Health. In this class, we went over various like scenarios of how pretty much geology like affects our health, but also the environment around us. So one of the studies that I found very interesting was about lead and how lead was dispersed during the 20th century all across the globe and has been deposited in the soils, which have caused a huge problem in the past and are still causing a huge problem. So I decided to base my senior capstone research around that. All right, so first couple basics. What is soil contamination? So soil contamination is when toxic substances such as metals and pesticides or organic pollutants are deposited in the soils. So once they're deposited, they can be harmful to human health and environmental health. And most of these toxic substances were deposited from human activities such as driving cars, industrial manufacturing, burning of waste, and also landfills and waste disposal sites. So a very important term to know when talking about toxicology and soil contamination is bioavailability. So bioavailability is the amount of a substance that can cause direct effects to human plants and animals if absorbed into the body. And there's a variety of factors that really tell the bioavailability of soil contamination, not just like the overall concentration of a certain contaminant. And one of these is particle size. So particle size, generally the smaller the particle, I'm talking like less than a hair's width, cause huge problems, or is incredibly bioavailable. The acidity of the soil, the more acid the soil, generally the more mobile and bioavailable certain contaminants, soil contaminants are. Organic matter content and moisture content also contribute to this. Generally in drier conditions, wind could pick up dust, soil dust, which can contain contaminants such as lead and can be inhaled, which can cause a variety of problems. In addition, temperature and soil minerality also have an effect on the bioavailability of soil contamination. So, a couple exposure pathways, especially in gardens, are either ingestion of soil or produce containing contamination, inhalation of dust or air particles, or contact with skin. So generally, inhalation of contaminated particles tends to be the most hazardous, just because it's harder to protect against. So why community gardens? Why focus on gardening in general? It's because especially in urban areas, they are commonly the cheapest source of fresh vegetables for low-income families. So a rising like, phenomenon in the United States today is this concept of food deserts. So that's where there are no like grocery stores near within walking distance of where a person lives, and that is the only way to get food is from convenience stores, and many of the times it doesn't contain the healthiest of food. Sometimes, like most of the time, it's just junk food. So by having urban gardens in city centers, it allows people to grow their own food and then, in a way, eat it. Also, it provides many people direct connection to the natural world within their own neighborhood, because many people who live in cities aren't as lucky as us to come out here and enjoy the wilderness. So they get nature whenever they can, and community gardens is a way to do that. And then many of these garden sites happen to be developed on abandoned industrial or residential sites because it's open land, it's available. But the problem with this is that there could be contaminants on the lot already that could contaminate any soil they bring in or soil that's already there. And most importantly of all, community gardens help foster a strong community. So a couple of measurements here. So the EPA has a limit of bare soil lead limit of how much lead could be in soil with considered like relatively safe amounts, and that's at 400 parts per million. But Washington State has a lower standard of bare soil lead limit at 250 parts per million. And for reference, the naturally occurring or background soil lead concentration in Washington State is average around 17 parts per million.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, yes.
So anything above 17 is considered contamination?
It's considered contamination, but according to like EPA in Washington,
yeah.
It's not like
natural.
Worrisome. Yeah,
okay.
It's not natural, but it's not worrisome. Like, it shouldn't be low risk, I guess.
Okay.
So earlier this summer, I was interning at the Duke Superfund Research Center, and to quickly the backtrack a bit, the Superfund project is a program under the EPA started in 1980 to essentially clean up abandoned hazardous waste sites. Because there's tons of hazardous waste sites all across the country, they kind of delegate certain tasks to various academic institutions like Duke, who take on specific aspects of remediation or reducing exposures. And what they do at Duke is they focus on early low-dose exposures and later life effects. So essentially, small doses of contamination that can harm you later. So the project that I worked on, that they're currently starting, is the Community Garden Engagement Project, which is going to take 3 gardens in North Carolina and then work with the communities and gardeners there to teach them about soil contamination and also ways to reduce potential contamination. And what my job on this project was to do all the background research on a variety of common soil contaminants, and hopefully this will help pick which gardens are, I guess, essentially the most like in need of remediation or are most at risk. And quick note, even though it is like technically a remediation site, it is not a Superfund site. So the project that I'm currently working on is my geology capstone, which I took was given soil from 3 gardens in North Carolina, and I'm going to analyze them for the overall content of lead, the bioavailability, the pH level of the soil, and hopefully be able to tell the source of the lead. So how Holden fits in is that it is in a unique position to be, one, in a rural area, very remote. So most like contaminants from like city like use probably are not here or come from a different source. Also, it is next to a cleanup site, a mine remediation site. And also, there's a lot of old buildings here that probably at one point were painted with lead paint. So elevated lead levels may exist in garden soil. So I tend to collect soil samples from around Holden's gardens, then analyze it the same way as I'm going to do with the North Carolina garden samples, and then compare them to see the difference, similarities and differences in between. Now, Travis is going to talk a little bit.
So, before the mine remediation, there was a bunch of studies that were done in the valley to try and figure out the extent of contamination from the mine and how that has impacted the ecology, the river health of Railroad Creek, and just the general air qualities and soil qualities in the valley. So, So this is a map from that comprehensive report. It's 1,500 pages. I read through it to find this last night. And it shows all of the sampling locations around the village. So right outside of Narnia, your school, they did a bunch of sampling because there used to be a septic tank there, and they were concerned about contaminants there. They did sampling just between chalets 4 and 5, just next to chalet 8, right around where the ark is, probably very close to where the picnic table is, pardon there, and then just next to where the garden is as well. So they, yeah, Shania?
It's a septic tank.
Septic tank is where our sewer drains into. So when you use the bathroom or you pour something down the sink, it all goes into a big tank, and it holds that, and it digests it, breaks it down over time. But sometimes they can get leaks, and then when all that stuff goes out in the environment, that's not good. So that's why they're interested in testing that soil.
What's the HT12A?
Oh, that's like another label from another part of this picture, but I cut it off so we could just look at the village. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Is the septic tanks the, like, the things that are circles and then have, like, lines?
Those are the sample locations. So that's a little crosshairs to mark where they took the sample from, which was just a scoop of soil.
No.
And then the next slide shows all of the results for those samples, and Andy was so kind to highlight the lead. So you can see the Washington State cleanup guideline, which is 250 parts per million. And parts per million means that for every million things, atoms or molecules, that there's a certain amount in that. So for them, they'd say if they found 250 lead parts in a million things in the soil, then that would be a cleanup. But all of these different sites from around Narnia and the buildings and in the green all were below that cleanup limit. And some of them, if you remember, there was the 17 parts per million, which is the background lead levels. Some were even below that, which means that they had lower concentrations than the average lead concentration in soil across the state.
Can I ask a question too? Is lead the most concerning thing, or is it just one of many? In your opinion?
It's hard to say. In my opinion, I would say lead's the most concerning just because of how widespread it was released. I'm going to get into the next couple of slides, but I'll explain why I believe lead is one the more dangerous, more hazardous substances.
Now, if I can just interject too, the only thing that they found, even I believe are on this side of the creek that required a cleanup, would have required a cleanup level, was beryllium. But they didn't find any of that in the soil in the village. I think it was in water.
And how long was that done? What year was that done?
It's a collection of studies over
course time.
Of several decades.
Oh, wow.
So this 1,500-page document, it has not only soil contamination and water contamination, but it also has, like, every observed animal in the valley and every plant that they've observed in the valley that they can catalog. So
yeah,
they understand how it's impacting the species as well. This is really, I mean, it's actually quite comprehensive, and it's pretty neat that there's this much science that's been done in the valley.
Mm-hmm. But this was before remediation.
Yes. Yeah, I believe most of these samples were in 94.
Okay.
They're dated up here. All right, well, we're going to continue on. So, give a little more, I guess, background on why do we care, how does it harm us, where can it be found? So, essentially, lead during the 20th century was used in a variety of products, including paint prior to 1978. It was used as a pigment and decreased longevity, and apparently it tasted good, but I would highly not recommend that. Then lead was used in gasoline as an anti-knocking agent till 1996. Lead also was emitted through various industrial processes such as smelting, mining, etc. Lead also occurs naturally in a mineral form generally found in galena, which is a lead salt.
May I also interject? So lead also is often used in different types of piping, and a lot of the old piping in the village had traces of lead in, which is why we did switch out of a lot of that. We do regular lead testing. But it's just interesting because the atomic like abbreviation for lead is PB, and that's derivative of the same base word that plumbing comes from. So it's something that's been a big problem in our water infrastructure for a long time as well.
Could you notice the difference if were there any tests outside of the village for lead? Were there any tests outside of the village for lead, and were they different?
Good question.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So I'll be giving a presentation in September on this as well, when we have the pastors group, social groups up. But the reason that they're doing a lot of the remediation and they're doing a cleanup on the other side of the creek is because there were very, very high lead levels in some places. So the standard cleanup level for Washington State was 250 parts per million, and in some places on the other side of the creek, in the tailings, they had as high as 1,500 parts per million. So much, much higher, almost six times higher than what that cleanup level.
Than on this side of the river.
And then on this side. Than,
so it was different on that side of the river than this. Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. Janine?
Is there like different results for like the lead that has been out of the state? Or I mean like out, like on the other side of, like on the other side of Chelan or something?
So that, yeah, the background lead number, that's the average amount of lead that's in the soil, that is probably samples from all over the state that's been compiled. So there's definitely different lead levels in different parts of the state.
So like there's one here and one on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alright. Keep going. So this is a little graph about lead use during the 20th century. So paint was mostly used in the beginning from like around 1910 to 1945. And then it took a very sharp down curve. And then lead gasoline took off. Partly because in the 1950s, people were buying more cars or driving cars and contributed highly to the lead contamination all around. And then around 1996, became illegal. Alright, so the chronic health effects of lead are very interesting because one, lead is not biologically, it has no role in the body. Like, it doesn't have a function. This is like calcium helps build your bones, lead does nothing. So, when you ingest lead, it actually replaces calcium in the body. So, instead of like building strong bones with calcium, you're building bones with lead, which could be very bad later on in life. Also, lead can replace the calcium ion in your brain. And what the calcium ion does, it translates neuroelectrical signals to like really in your brain. And when lead replaces it, it doesn't send any signals. And this could cause all the variety of brain effects and side effects from it. So lead is affects children the most because they're still growing and tend to put random objects in their mouths. And this can cause behavior and learning problems, lower IQ and hyperactivity, slowed growth, hearing problems, anemia, and brain damage. Adults are a little bit more resistant to lead contamination. Effects are a little more mild, but it's still hazardous. And cause increased blood pressure, decreased kidney function, reproductive problems, impaired concentration. And also lead in pregnant women is also bad for the fetus because it causes reduced growth or premature birth. So, currently right now, the Center of Disease Control has a lead level limit of 5 micrograms per deciliter, which is lower than 10, which was the old level back in 2011. But there are still some studies that say that the 5 micrograms per deciliter is too high, as negative effects can be seen as low as 2.5 micrograms per deciliter. So it's an ongoing process to like determine what the level should be. Thankfully, you can avoid lead contamination fairly easily from soil. And if you practice safe gardening practices, such as wearing gloves, washing produce and hands thoroughly, leaving boots or shoes outside instead, so you don't track in lead dust or soil, and also do not eat the soil in gardens general rule. It's good to not do that.
Don't eat dirt.
So, there are many ways, easy ways, to remediate lead contamination in soil. I mean, one, like the major one that's not cost effective and requires a lot of manpower is actually physically taking out all the dirt and replacing it with clean soil. But there are many like easier ways to do it, such as just raising the pH level of soil to lower the mobility of contaminants. And this can be done very easily by adding lime to soil. In addition, adding soil amendments high in phosphorus, which are included in some fertilizers and in fish bone meal, can help lock away lead, because what it does is the phosphorus binds to the lead, creating a new mineral that's not easily bioavailable. In addition, adding compost and clean soil can help create a barrier between any contaminated soil and yourself. Also, gardening in raised beds helps like contain your clean soil and keeping it away from contaminated soil.
So yes. Are you assuming the raised beds have new soil, clean soil?
Oh, yes. All right, so further resources, the US EPA has got a great website and with like all like contaminants if you want to learn more about different like toxicities or toxicology. In addition, Agency of Toxic Substances and Disease Registry is also very good. And if you want any guides or any further information, I've got a ton of it about any soil contamination or urban gardening or community gardening in general. I'd be happy to share with you. All right, any questions?
Have they done any studies like this in different states?
Oh, definitely. Many states.
And do different climates affect, like, drier dirt affect the hazard level of lead or other contaminants in that soil?
They kind of do. They don't really affect the level of lead, but generally, the drier conditions, the more easily you could be infected or ingest in lead, the more bioavailable it is.
You also, depending on what the climate is, that influences the types of plants that grow there, and different plants help to produce different kinds of soils. So because we have a lot of pine trees and coniferous trees produce needles, they make the ground around them more acidic. So that changes how mobile lead or something could be. Whereas maybe in other parts of the United States, like where I'm from, Minnesota, where we have more leafy trees like maple and oak and things like that, it's not as acidic of soil.
So acidic soil helps contain it or helps keep it from spreading? Or
no, acidic soil helps it spread. You want more neutral soil or alkaline or basic.
Okay.
And so like in the circumstance of remediation, when you're going up the road, you look over at their water treatment plant, you see these big silos. Those are full of lime, which is lime sometimes can come from limestone, which is more basic, it's more alkaline. Mm-hmm. And they use that in this project to decrease the acidity of some of those soils and to bind to some of these particles that would otherwise get into the water.
Essentially, the techniques I suggested are what they used on the mine tailings, actually. So they didn't actually remove all the contamination, but they made it pretty much safe.
Tried to neutralize the balance. Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Is there any way how lead affects dirt?
Affects dirt?
Yeah. Lead?
Well, if you think about it like this, dirt is a variety of elements combined, and lead is just one element, just one piece of the puzzle in dirt. So, in a way, like, the more lead you have, the more lead that's in your dirt.
So, my understanding is Washington State has higher or more stringent environmental standards. So on this lead standard, how does it compare to other states? Are we, or are a lot of states going lower than the national standard?
Not very many. Washington's very in the forefront of lead, like, regulation. I think California has it even as low as 90 parts per million, if I'm not mistaken. And they're like by far the lowest.
Could that be because it's so dry down
there? Yeah, also they're very like, their environmental website out of any other state is by far the best. They're in the forefront of, they're like, their regulations, almost all of them across the board are better than the EPA is.
And that's a, the wind-blown dust is a huge way that it affects humans, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You see old pictures of the village, sometimes there's this big orange haze going around because the tailwinds would blow around. And they did, the air quality studies showed that it wasn't hazardous to human health at that point in time. There wasn't high enough lead levels that were being transmitted. But that's still a risk, and it's part of why they wanted to put material on top of the tailwinds so that they wouldn't get that dust that you could inhale.
Yes.
I have William.
Go ahead.
I've got two questions. My first one is, why do we have lead?
Why do we have lead? Well, that's a good question. Well, lead is actually a naturally occurring substance. Like, it's been used all the way back since, like, the Romans in Europe. They used it because it's very malleable. It's easy to create metal.
Fishing sinkers.
Yes.
Bullets and guns. Mm-hmm. Weights on your wheels so your wheels don't wobble.
Olive presses.
Lots of lead uses that are useful.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor's office, too.
Yeah.
And my second question was that, which state has the most lead?
The most lead.
Oh, New Jersey.
I mean, that's an interesting question. I don't know if I could break it down by state, but generally cities tend to have the most amount of lead. And this is because the concentration, there's a lot more lead paint use, but also higher traffic volume, because back in the day, cars emitted lead from the tailpipes because it was using gas. It's no longer true. But that lead was dispersed all, concentrated mostly in cities. So generally that's where you find the highest concentrations of lead. Yes?
I used to live in a town which had several big headframes in mining, and it was an older town, so many of them still had lead painting. Would that be different from Holden because they haven't done anything about it, and there's also big lakes of chemicals which were used?
Butte, Montana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They tested our attic dust there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Butte was also a copper mine, it still is, and has very similar contaminants to what is here, but at the mine site itself, so did you ever go to the Berkeley pit?
Yeah.
Go out on the platform and look down. So that is a really unique situation because it's a really, really big pit that collects all of those contaminants. But it's possible that those contaminants could also be around the town and in different places. I'm sure they've done a lot of studies on that because that's a really popular place in science. It's really interesting. But I can't answer that.
I have a question.
Oh, yes.
I just have two, I think, simple questions. But where do you plan to take, like, where are you thinking you'll take soil samples, or do you know yet, here, while you're here?
I haven't really gone through the garden and, like, mapped them out yet, but
yeah.
Probably closer to the building. And I kind of want to recreate, like, a general profile, so probably, like, all around.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to do is going to keep them separate and then also combine some of it so you get like your average and then per location within the garden.
Can we sample the same areas that was in that diagram?
I think just one. Because one of them was like specifically in the garden, the rest were like all around the village. I'm just going to focus.
Oh, you're just focusing on the garden?
Yes.
But
yeah.
It's interesting in Holden because we do a lot of gardening around houses as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what is like a garden site at Holden sort of ambiguous?
Mm-hmm. Yes?
I've got two more questions for you. Okay, so dirt? What is dirt made out of?
What's dirt made out of? It's made out of a lot of things. Mostly it is, so dirt or soil forms from a chemical reaction with plants and like the bedrock. So let's say like this rock here. So over time, like, plants break down through the roots, break down the rock into like clay or soil. and that is like is used as like growing medium for plants. So it's pretty much made out of like old rock and also organic material once it dies, or plant, the plants on top die.
And my second question is, what's lead made out of?
Lead is an element. Like, have you seen the periodic table of elements, like maybe in science? Like all those like two letter abbreviations?
Yes.
Lead is essentially like a basic building block of things. Yeah. So lead is... essentially, it's... and it's
neutrons,
one lead.
Neutrons, protons.
Yeah, without getting like... So
science. It's what's, a, what's the science guy?
The science guy.
We'll watch some Bill the Science Guy.
We'll talk about that in sciences.
Talk about all this.
Session.
One last thing that I think is also really interesting. One of the things I was really concerned about when I first learned about lead at Holden was rhubarb. Because I eat a lot of rhubarb. And I like making rhubarb pie and like eating rhubarb sauce and things like that. And it's important to know and understand that plants do a really good job of weeding out different contaminants. So as they sit in the soil, their roots can decide in some way what things to take up from that soil. So like in orchards, for example, you could have really high lead levels in an orchard, but you could still eat the apples because they do such a good job of weeding out those contaminants. And I believe it's the same. I have a paper that goes through like plant by plant how they take up plants. But it's just good to know that even if there were really heavily contaminated soils that hold them, that the plants would probably do a very good job of weeding that out. It's kind of neat.
Also interesting too is when you eat food, it's harder for like once the lead's like in your body, it's harder for it to like be absorbed into the membrane if your stomach is full. So it's kind of interesting. So you would have to eat a lot, like more than like the humanly possible amount of lead-laden produce to really like get that like absorb that much contamination.
Do different plants choose to do? Do different plants absorb contaminants differently?
Yes, actually. So, herbs are like, they absorb lead the most, but again, you don't need like a ton enough herbs to actually get sick. But,
apple.
Like an apple or a tomato.
Yeah.
Zucchini.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't absorb that much lead.